Hi, Steve Sadak here from the podcast you're listening to. Have you ever wanted to see We Hate Movies live? Well, if you live in Atlanta, Houston, or Austin, Texas, this spring you can. That's right. This spring, we are hitting the road and going a bit south to bring you folks comedy that only jaded New Yorkers could come up with. First up, on April the 25th, we are going to the City Winery in Atlanta to talk about Gamer. That's that Gerard Butler movie where a little kid gets to control him through his television or something. Expect a lot of axe in this one. Then, after a short break, we're going to be doing a two-night dance in Texas. On May 14th, we'll be at the Houston Improv talking about a Houston classic, RoboCop 2. That is, to date, the only RoboCop sequel Peter Weller could get out of bed for. It's also got a little kid gangster, a Frank Miller script credit, and a drug called Nuke. You gotta come out and see that live. Then, the very next night, it's gonna be a dark night as we stroll into Cap
City
Comedy Club in Austin, Texas to do a live We Love Movies episode on From Dusk Till Dawn. Bank robbers versus vampires. Harvey Keitel versus a Southern accent. And Salma Hayek's little toes versus Quentin Tarantino's wet mouth. It's going to be a slobber knocker and it's all going to be live on stage. You definitely don't want to miss this Texas two-step, so definitely come out for both shows. Now, all ticketing info is at whmpodcast.com/tour. So go there right now to get your tickets. Right now, before it's too late. WHMpodcast.com/tour right now for our spring tour that kicks ass.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to On Screen Live. I'm Andrew Jupin, and this is the show for Monday, March the 25th. Boy, oh boy, a lot of people were busting over the weekend. Hope it made you feel good. Or you were, you know, getting nun-pilled, maybe. I don't know what was going on. Or maybe you spent your entire weekend wrapped up in the clutches of March Madness. But I got some friends to bring in today. We got a lot to review. We got three big reviews coming in hot here. Bring in some buds to help me out with it. First up, oh, I know he was busting all weekend. Eric Sisko.
Oh, my God. It's one of my favorite things to do. And also, clutches of March Madness, not related to basketball, but those are in me.
The urge to kill rising.
Oh, my God. I think about murder every day. Doesn't everyone... Pound off in the chat if you do.
Or maybe every other day. How about that? You're going to incriminate yourself, dude. and coming in hot with a brand new book. You know him, you love him. Mr. Christopher Cabin.
The final coup de grace that I had anticipated with fear now because of reality. The kitchen door was met with a, oh, can't say that. Okay.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Oh, I just realized you're reading Lenny Bruce there, dude. Better shut it down.
Oh, is this, we're reading books now? Is this silent study hall here? Let me.
Oh, you're jacking my bit. Thank you. Good. Yes.
Silent study hall.
Okay. Talent card. We got to get to him one day.
See, clearly, though, you keep your face in the thing. You care more about the vision.
Big ups to folks in the chat here. Kate G, Fortune's daughter, our good friend Jen Stansfield hanging out. Skinny Menace, Rob Griffin, Captain Lopsides, like that. I'm So Rachel, Prestonian, Tater Tot, Marshy. What's up, everybody? Hope you all had a great, great weekend. Eddie Failson, of course, sucked. Love all the classics like Eddie Failson and Sucked.
I'm a big Sucked fan.
Sucked fan.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Should say Steve Sadak busted in a containment unit right now.
That's right. Indecent exposure in lower Manhattan. We got to get him out. Okay. We're going to start a movement to get him out of jail.
No, absolutely not. I think like William Atherton, you're on William Atherton's side. I think we should keep him in there. He's better there to keep himself. Maybe one day we can cure whatever made him a ghost and that will make it better. But for now, keep him in there. Let him
keep him in the containment unit. Exactly.
Let him bounce off the walls. That's what you need.
Until we find a cure for being a ghost, which in Steve's case was 47 stab wounds to the back. That's what you're saying.
Yes. You look, we're up to 23, and I'm really happy with that.
Yeah, we got some birthdays to get to today. First up, Remembering the Dead, always the first slot with on-screen live birthday wishes. Remembering the Dead this week would have been 113 years old. Jack Ruby,
seen here
shooting Lee Harvey Oswald to death.
But that's not even, do you have a face pic of Jack Ruby?
No, I just wanted to show that one. I don't know.
Patriot.
Let me see. Did I actually download one first? And then I was like, no, this one will be funnier. Let me see, Chris Cavan, because I know you'll be. Actually, you know what?
I don't know if I know what Jack Ruby actually looks like. I just know that Danny Aiello played him once.
That's he looks
all.
Like every, you know.
And Brian Doyle. Yeah. I forgot about Brian Doyle, of course, the king.
He looks like all of us. Jack Ruby is all of us.
Anyway, happy birthday in hell, sir.
King. He's a king in hell, I think. He's got one of the
depending upon who you talk to, American hero in hell.
Yeah, you know what? He's doing all right.
Speaking of some other heroes today, Bonnie Bedelia turns 78. Sir Elton John, 76 years old. We will be returning to her on Melrose Place soon enough, but a big happy 62nd birthday to Marcia Cross.
Oh, happy birthday.
That's right. I don't think she ever appeared on Melrose Place, but a big old 58th happy birthday to SJP herself, Sarah Jessica Parker, and the love of Screech Powers' life, Lark Voorhees, turns 50 from Saved by the Bell. Lisa Turtle from Saved by the Bell,
of course.
Big 5-0 today,
man. Yeah. You know, when we were coming up watching all the Saved by the Bell, I would never think one day they'd be 50 and I'd be also older. And
yeah, well, that's the way it's happening now, dude. Screech is dead.
Right. Oh, right. Yeah, you know, we do Melrose 2.0, where we recap 90210 and Melrose Place, and now Luke Perry has departed as well.
That's right. That's right. Oh, yeah. Eric, people asking in the chat if you have any tattoos of Jack Ruby.
Not yet.
No. Oh, no. He would not. He's not going to besmirch his body. That's not going to be happening.
Well, I got a Lee Harvey on my Lee Harvey.
Oh, hey now. Hey now.
Is that a cock ring in your left ball? Is that what that is?
Well, no. The it's a tasteful tattoo. The cock ring represents the magic bullet through Kennedy's head.
I see. Okay.
Oh, that's sure. There you go.
Different terminology. Okay.
Sure. Yeah.
Got it.
It's a roadmap of pain down there, I'll tell you.
It sure is. A lot of roadmaps to pain today, my friend, including at the box office. Look at that non-transition. Let's take a look at the numbers. This is Highest Gross. All right, gang. This a couple of surprises here. Well, I guess just maybe one surprise. Actually, no. I will say two surprises at the box office this week. But something not surprising at all. In at number 5, Arthur the King, Mark Wahlberg's dog adventure movie, which is unfortunately not making too much of a splash here. Week 2, just another 4.4 mil. Looking at 15 mil total.
This movie, the dog plays fetch with him because he's so stupid. Yes. He's the dog in this scenario, right?
I think that's the case. Yeah, he's doing all sorts of stupid human tricks.
If that was the movie, I would have seen it. The way it is now, how can 15 million not be close to how much this costs?
I'm shocked you haven't
seen Wahlberg and a dog.
How have you not seen this, Chris? You and your friend Pam and Ripley love watching movies together.
We do, but you know what? Cameron's been, you know, he's been off on vacation. I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. He's just been gone for a little while.
Oh, okay.
I haven't been able to see him. And
I hope you find a new website.
Well, no, I mean, me and we've talked about this before. My other friend, Dr. Tori Torrentino, he always is good with getting a backup for what if I really want to see something, he will. But he has also been on vacation. We hope next week they will be back. But I have not seen Arthur the King. I, I went through my phase of seeing as many of these Mark Wahlberg movies as I can for the show.
You can only do so much, dude.
So I have to draw the line somewhere, and dog movies is definitely a line in the sand.
I will say two things about Arthur the King. One, I looked it up on one of my websites here. Nothing on the budget front. Do some digging into that maybe. But I will say one positive thing about this movie, and like, you know, it could be great. I don't know. I didn't see it. I did look up some spoilers on doesthedogdie.com.
And it's a big yes, folks.
No, it's a big no, which means that at some point I can see the movie. But
yeah. Oh, okay.
I will say, when I went to go see Ghostbusters this weekend, one of the commercials at AMC, in front of it was Mark Wahlberg and this dog doing some big commercial for some like pet adoption agency. And I was like, oh, all right, that's some good here. And it's like Mark Wahlberg, and he's like, hey, here's me and this dog, Arthur. We're in this new movie, Arthur the King, together. You should adopt some dogs yourself, stupid.
It's not part of his app, Christian Smash, is it? Or
no, he's not asking anybody to stay prayed up or anything like that.
Okay.
Made a commercial later on for that Jesus show that we were talking about, The Chosen.
Oh, The Chosen. The movie theater TV show, which is great.
Yes, the movie theater TV show. Yes, siree. Because I don't know where else it's airing, by the way. That's a great point. Where can you find this on television?
I have no idea. I really
probably
don't.
Newsmax or OAN or something.
Wait, maybe. I have no idea. Does Angel Distribution have its own TV network?
Not yet, but that's right around the corner, dude. One of the surprises right here, Immaculate coming in at number 4. Decent little showing here. 5.4 million for Neon here, and kind of the other numbers on this. It's fine. It's not great. I will say, oddly, this movie, and I'll talk about it a little later, but a C something cinema scores. I don't know if it was C minus or, and like with horror, I mean, cinema score is like audience shit. That is generally higher. So folks, not too crazy about this Immaculate.
I did not know cinema score went under a B+.
I know, exactly.
All times they do. They really do.
We love it.
Most of the time they do love it.
So one of the big surprises here, though, in at number 3, we were not just sort of dropping down one slot at a time, because previously last week at number 1, we had Kung Fu Panda 4.
Hold on there, Panda. You got to be in this top 10 for the rest of the year.
But he's rocking at number 3 right now, dude. $16.8 million brings it up to $133 million domestic. Doing all right. Doing just all right. But yeah, as far as staying in the top 10 for the rest of the calendar year, like you're hoping, Eric, I don't know
about
that.
That was just my guess because of migration and Wonka. They're like 50 weeks.
Backing off already, of course. Here it comes. Backing off from it originally.
No, he's explaining the thought process, Chris Cabin. There's a difference.
Yes, I won't back off of it. I can't affect it other than buying movie tickets for it, which I won't do. I haven't seen the first three.
You should be going to the movie theater daily to buy tickets for this thing if you really want this bet with no one to pay off.
The bet with no one, for sure.
Whip up your rabid social media following to go out. You're going to buy a bunch of tickets for this and then just tell people they can show up at the box office.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Siska left me one for Kung Fu Panda.
Right. I'm going to do the Sound of Freedom type of thing. Yeah.
And then they can be like, oh, man, they're fucking breaking the air conditioner at all the Kung Fu Panda 4 theaters. I can't believe it.
It's such an important movie. Everyone needs to go and see it.
Wait, I'm waiting. No, I'm sorry. Could you stop cleaning the theater? I'm waiting for the QR code that Eric Siska was paying for after Kung Fu Panda 4. I was supposed to click it, and then I'm supposed to get a rebate.
It'll happen one day. One day I'll have enough cachet to do this.
Yes. One day you'll wield the power. Coming in at number 2, very shocked to see it hold its own here. Dune Part 2.
Nice.
You got a Dune it coming in at $17.6 million. This movie is doing quite all right, fellas.
It's holding on, just like little Timmy on the worm.
That's right. Yes. Looking like, let's see here. Oh, it is now surpassed many fewer weeks. Wonka's $218 million domestic total. We're at What are they at here now? This guy is at 233. Pretty crazy. Yeah. Still going strong. Definitely held on to a lot of the, what am I trying to say? IMAX theaters.
Okay.
Instead of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire getting in there, but that did not stop our Ghostbusters Frozen Empire friends from coming in at number one.
Oh yeah.
$45.2 million. Look at that. You'll be shocked to know 56% of this audience under 35 years old.
What? I'm not surprised.
Wait, how, what percentage?
56% were under 35 years old.
I'm shocked that anyone like under, I'm shocked that anyone under 42 is going to see this.
Well, because these are the people like our age bringing their kids. This is now like their kids' Ghostbusters.
Of course. I mean, listen,
at least according to this psycho that was going up one side of me and down the other on Instagram, because I had the fucking audacity to say in the reel as I was going to see the movie that, you know, honestly, I wasn't really that excited to go see it. And this motherfucker tearing me up and down.
Really ripped your asshole.
This isn't a cash grab like you cynical people think it is. Fans of the franchise are bringing their kids.
Okay.
It's not your Ghostbusters anymore. Like this dude. Dude, I had an orgasm pressing the remove follower button with that guy. The fuck out of here, folks.
Curious what his reaction to Ghostbusters 2016 was. I'm waging it's a little different.
I bet you it's a little, I bet you it was a lot of not my Ghostbusters and whatnot. We'll get to it in a minute, but like, folks, you gotta relax. If someone doesn't like what you like, you have got to relax. You'll see a perfect example of it later in the program where we review Doug Liman's Roadhouse. But until then, I will say, just to get a shout out to all of our Patreon folks who participated in the box office poll this weekend. Well done. 17% of you got it right in there, between $40 and $45 million. So right on the high end of the tracking. Y'all were very smart with that one. Let's see. Oh, and elsewhere around the box office, check this shit out, because we reviewed it last week. Late Night with the Devil actually came in sixth.
Wow, doing very well. Crazy. We should mention we reviewed it last week. We did not know about the inclusion of AI when we reviewed it. No. I really think they should swap them out. It's not really hard. It's like three graphics.
Yeah. I will swap see what out. Happens. We'll see what happens with the VOD release, because it has it gone directly to VOD as well.
I think it's going Shudder in April 19th. I think
that's what I would wonder what happens. That if something was going to happen, it would happen then. So yeah, I would like to. I'd be wondering what happens.
I'll tell you this.
I hope they do it.
Yeah, I mean, I hope they do it too. I'm not crazy about it, but I will tell you this: like, I hold a tiny ass, like, genre production way less, you know, to the fire than I do that fucking Marvel show where they used a shit ton of AI.
Oh, yeah. Secret Invasion
in their, you know, opening thing. Like, so, you know, it's gonna come down to a budgetary thing now. You know what I mean? And like, I don't think it's great, and hopefully they can, you know, find some funds to swap it out or whatever. But yeah.
No, yeah. I mean, I think
Hang on a second. I gotta hop in here. Nico Fish saying the AI drama is what's selling those tickets. It's absolutely not. No way someone's going to the theater to buy a ticket to a movie because they heard there's two shots of AI in it.
For people who just look at things through titles, which does still happen, like if you're just looking for the big one, I can see having that discussion, like boosting it up in social media places. People see the title more. It does lead to some ticket sales, but I don't think it's the thing that's driving people.
It did not drive this to number six at the box office with $2.8 million. That's stellar reviews and decent word of mouth out of South By going right into it. I mean, maybe some people were like, yeah, okay, let's go take a look, but no way the driving force there for sure. Anyway, look, I still think it's a fucking great movie, that little bit.
I think it is still a good movie. I think it is worth going back and changing those three images. Someone in the chat is asking what we even mean by AI here. And it is, There are interstitial, like the movie's not AI. It's the AI is not choosing shit. It's not
right.
But it's just little glimpses of art. Like we'll be right back on Night Owls with Jack Delroy. That is the instance of AI. We're talking about maybe 6 seconds in the entire film.
Yeah.
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 And I think this was special because you got word about this before the thing actually came out. Whereas stuff like Night Country had this. Again, as you guys pointed out, the Marvel show had this. We've been using, honestly, in my view, if you're really so against AI, you probably should have been against de-aging from the beginning, like boycottably.
Right. And CGI.
CGI, whatever, that if that's going to use, but like auto creating things like that. I don't like that. I think that takes a creative element out of something that should be creative. So that specifically, like de-aging, the Dune 2 thing is an iffy thing. I know they did as good as they could. I don't think that's boycottable. I don't really think this is boycottable. But like, if you're going to
Dune 2 thing, I don't even.
They created a very. I don't want to get into it because I don't have the wording right in front of me. There's an article on Variety. There was a system they created that sounds a lot like how you would teach an AI how to do something, but they didn't use those words. How they colored all the Fremen eyes.
I see.
And that's just a technique, and those are techniques where I'm like, I'm not going to get too crazy about AI on things like that. But if you are going to care about this, like these people do, I think you should be pissed off about that as pissed off as you are about this. And most of them are not.
Yeah. I mean, don't pick and choose with this. And that's the unfortunate thing, right? Is like, you may not know, you know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. That's, I feel like, you know, these things are slipped through more than you realize. But all this to say, you know, if you want to boycott it, hey, that's totally fine.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're curious about checking out the movie, it's a whole full-throated recommendation for these three pigs talking at you right now. Now, what will not be curated with any AI whatsoever, forget artificial intelligence. You're not going to get any real intelligence when we go on tour this spring.
Ooh.
You like that transition there, fellas? Look at that.
Yeah.
This is real art, by the way, created by Philippe Sobrero, of course. Does all of our tour art, of course. Very talented, real-life artist. We'll say gamer. We're playing Atlanta, the City Winery in Atlanta, 425. We're talking gamer with Gerard Butler. Again, nary a piece of intelligence to be found in that movie, artificial or otherwise.
Yes, no, nothing there.
Do come out. It'll be a lot of fun. Tickets are moving on that show, so you're going to want to snag those now.
That's right.
We're a month out from today.
Oh, right. Wow. Yeah.
There you go.
Man, time flies when you're having fun, folks. Then, month after that, we will be making our debut in Space City, Houston, Texas, at the Houston Improv, talking RoboCop 2. That's going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited to go back. I might even do, although I don't want to get too like mixed up with the stories, I feel like I know the first one well enough to separate it out. I might do like a one rewatch, then into two.
And then into three. And then into the Canadian TV movies.
Absolutely.
And then into the 2014 remake.
No, don't, you can stop right there.
I tried some of those, the Canadian TV movies there. Yeah. It's like RoboCop, Firestorm, or whatever the shit. I got like 15 minutes into whatever the first one was. And
wait. RoboCop Firestorm? Is he saving Huey Long?
He is.
Oh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, and guess who lit the fire in that forest?
Who did
209.
That?
At 209.
Oh my God. Okay. He was helping William Forsythe. That makes so much more sense now.
Yep.
And then the night after that, we are returning to Austin, Texas. First time in 6 years, we'll be back there to talk about From Dusk Till Dawn. In a We Love Movies official capacity, folks.
Yes.
And that's happening at the Cap City Comedy Club. Very stoked to get back to Austin as well, man.
Very excited. And Texas, come through. You know, some people are like, oh, you know, when are you coming back to my city? Come to the shows and we will come back. So come.
That's right. That's how it works.
Well, Steve's not here. So it's dark night. Bam. There we go. I think we had to do it.
Yeah, no, that's true. That keeps the curse at bay.
Yes.
Those are going to be really fun. We love going on tour. We love seeing folks. All those shows, by the way, meet and greets happening. We'll be shaking hands, saying hi, taking pictures, signing shit. We love hanging out with all you guys. That's why we come out on the road, man. It's better than better than the internet, sometimes they say. So anyway, whmpodcast.com. Click on that tour button. It'll take you to all the ticketing information. It's a busy spring. It's going to be a fun-ass spring, busy spring. Got a busy weekend at the box office here, dudes. Let's get into it. First up on screen, RoboCop, Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire, Creep.
I did not get a chance to check this out. I'm kind of dreading it. I figured maybe in January,
probably
I would
have in January.
To see it anyway. So
you are more than likely going to be seeing it in January for something we do.
In some capacity.
I will say I think this is better than Afterlife.
Is it the best one? Best Ghostbusters movie?
No. Okay. Just a little better than the worst one. It's just a little bit better than the Gil Kenan, who is I forget if it's Kenan or Keenan.
Keenan, but yeah, go ahead.
He did Monster House, which is a really inventive animated movie, and I think fantastical stuff is really his bag. All the fantastical stuff in this movie works way better than it has. I would say even in the 2016 Ghostbusters, like there's a garbage bag chase that's really fucking funny. There's these little notes of things that really work, but the minute it's the human stuff, dead, completely gone. No, I couldn't care less.
Like, can I ask you guys how was Patton Oswalt and Kumail Nanjiani, and did they meet up with young Sheldon, and did they say bazinga to the screen at any time?
No bazingas. Pat, I thought Pat has like one big scene, and I thought that scene was well done. It's mostly to show off a really interesting animated sequence, the history of the main villain, which doesn't get much time at the end there.
Sure doesn't.
Garaka. And that was well done, but he just explains it essentially. Nanjiani has a bigger role as I guess like the Rick Moranis-esque character.
It's sort of like he's a very important guy for like the big mystical story thing that's happening. Yeah. And I will say, like, I thought he was pretty entertaining too. He's not in it a ton. He's in it more than Patton, who Patton I also thought was totally fine and funny in it.
Find off putting is Kumail Nanjiani is now in Star Wars, Ghostbusters, the MCU, Men in Black.
It is a little annoying.
It's every move. It's every franchise.
Yeah. There isn't much, and he's just been doing a lot. Curse of current stardom is that you say yes to everything, right?
Oh, and he's in X-Files, right? He's in everything.
Exactly. Everything you're offered, just do it.
Nothing against him. I actually saw him do stand-up when he was still starting out in New York, and he was very funny. So nothing against him at all, but it's just like overload.
I still really like The Big Sick. I think it's a good movie.
It's a good movie. I think he had me laughing in this. He absolutely did. I will say again, the whole like the Spangler family drama is just not a part of it that I care about. Right. Yeah. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I don't have kids. I don't give a shit. Like, that part does not speak to me. I think McKenna Grace is still the MVP of this movie, just like she was with the last one. She actually has like, because again, now what we're talking about is like, it's speaking of stuffed, right? And too many people and whatever, like there's too many characters in this movie. And so like Finn Wolfhard totally gets the shaft. His whole thing is like a couple of scenes with Slimer and that's it. She actually has this kind of sweet, like queer teen romance thread. Yeah. Like that's like, it's something. And I was like, okay, like this actually feels well-rounded enough. It's thought out, you know, it's holding my interest. The second it's like Paul Rudd maybe trying to be stepdad, like I don't care. I don't think that stuff works. If it's in some other movie, sure, but like they're trying to do like, oh, should I, you know, call him dad while the containment unit's gonna explode? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like it just, that shit didn't really
too much
fly
struggling.
With me.
Yeah, too much struggling, and you can't pay anything off. Even the like. You're doing this theoretically, you're doing all these things to enrich the main plot. And the main plot, Garaka comes like the last 20, 15 minutes, maybe, and is barely there. Like there's one big face off, barely happens, and then it's over. And then like we're talking about the Spanglers again and whether we're a family or not. And is Carrion Coon and Paul Rudd going to make it? And right. I don't care. I really don't care.
I super don't. And like the things that they added, I thought were actually kind of interesting. Like Peck being the mayor of New York City. Like you get William Atherton as the crotchety mayor who still hates the Ghostbusters. Mm. And like, I thought that was kind of cool. And I was like, okay, explore that. Like, here's this dude that despised them in that first movie, had them put away and, you know, arrested and whatever. Now he's the mayor. Like, what does that look like? And then also like all the stuff that they set up with Winston and everything that he's built and like his philanthropy, like he's got a really cool thing going on that there's just not enough time to really explain or flesh it out. Really, I mean, they explain it. They certainly explain it, but they don't. You don't really see it in practice that much.
No like action.
James Acaster, who I think is a really funny stand-up, is like sort of like the assistant to Winston in this laboratory, and like he's pretty cool, but you don't really get to know too much about the character, you know.
So they sideline all of that to focus on. Am I being good mommy daddy?
Well, that's part of it. It keeps jumping. Like, as I said, I think this is a familiar problem. It is a movie written as a season of TV. There are very clear each episode would have taken on. One would have been the ghost relationship that happens. One would have been Paul Rudd and Carrie Coon. One would have been Finn Wolfhard and Slimer. All this stuff. And throughout it, you would get stuff about the Garaka thing. Kumail Nanjiani's whole role in it. These things would have all gotten their own little bit in a TV series, but in a movie, it does like they did nothing to blend it in. They did nothing to be like, here's a little note of this. Here's a tiny sprinkle of it. They have to have huge fucking scenes in the middle of another movie you're making that kind of tells you like, well, we care about this person and we do care about that person too. And we do care about this person and we do care about that person. Also, that person is worthy. That one's worthy as well. And oh, this one over there. Also, this one. We promise we are caring about everybody. I promise. We care. Just give us your fucking money, please.
You know who they didn't care for, dude? The funny thing is, with everybody that's getting stuffed back in these movies, I guess that firehouse is only big enough for one ghost because Muncher nowhere to be found in this movie.
What?
Muncher, total Muncher erasure, dude.
You couldn't have even a fun time with Slimer and Muncher. Yeah, Eric, it's your right to cry. If you're crying, you're right to. I want you to feel like this is a safe space for that. This Slime, I do feel like they should have gotten Muncher back. If you're going to bring back all this other shit, you should bring back Muncher. Eric, you want to talk? You look very emotional.
How do they get rid of... That's the one redeeming thing about Afterlife was the big old honking Muncher.
Yeah, well, I guess because you have a boatload of Slimer, but I was thrown for a loop too, because at the start of, you know, before the movie started, you have like Maria Menounos out there on the front lines doing movie trivia and whatever the fuck. They did a thing for Ghostbusters trivia and I could not think of Muncher's name, but it was like, what's the name of this blue ghost in Afterlife? And I was like, oh yeah, that thing. And then it said Muncher and I was like, oh, going to be dealing with Muncher in this movie. Oh, did Muncher make the move to the Big Apple too? Apparently not.
Where did he go? Where did he go? Did he cross over? Was his business finished?
I think maybe. They must have just, they busted him at the other movie and that's it. That's the end of it. I will say, go ahead, Chris.
I mean, he humped and he ate a lot of fire hydrants. He might have been, maybe that's all he had to do. Maybe that was what he was staying on this earth to do, was to hump and eat one more fire hydrant and that's it. I don't know.
Here's something I never thought I would say, possibly ever again, with a new movie. I thought Dan Aykroyd was pretty good in this movie. I think as far as like the old timers who are, you know, dragged back in, Aykroyd has the largest role by far. He's really worked into the story more than Ray or more than,
much more
Peter and Winston and, Janine. Like, he's involved in the movie. And, like, you can tell he was really thrilled by this. Like, he was really happy to be involved with it. He actually has a great scene. Dan Aykroyd and Ernie Hudson have a scene together, like, on a stairwell where it's, like, kind of talking about, like, maybe you shouldn't be doing Ghostbuster shit because you're an old man anymore kind of stuff. And, like, I don't know. I actually thought all that worked really well. I thought the two of them were done nicely together. Annie Potts is funny in it, but again, not a ton. I think she's probably in it less than she is in the Afterlife. And Murray, he just kind of comes in for the scenes that you saw in the trailer. There's not a ton else he's given to do. But again, there is a sequence with Bill Murray that, Chris, to your point about like television episodes, it would have been like episode 4. This is where we take it to Venkman. And yeah, this is Venkman's episode and whatever. And I mean, I don't know if if Sony wanted to make a Ghostbusters TV show like this, it would have worked better. It would play better. You know, as it is, I do think this is better than Afterlife. One of the biggest reasons is it's back in New York City. The Ghostbusters are New Yorkers. Sorry. They're not farting around Oklahoma or whatever's going on in that last movie. So, you know, there was that. It's again, like, I didn't hate it. It's just, it's a movie that's just not for me, and it's a little crowded.
And there's more comedy, I guess. It's less, they're not like folding an American flag over a coffin and weeping during the entire thing.
Nothing like that. It's not Last Flag Flying. Okay. It's much like, I mean, to be honest, it's very much like what happened with Dune, although both Dunes are really good. The first Dune got all this setup done so that the second one could just go and didn't have to worry about any of that. This one can also similarly not worry so much about who the fuck is Paul Rudd? Where did he come from? Why did he get here? All this shit. It just can run with that stuff. And therefore, it doesn't feel as hampered by that. But it does feel hampered by so many narratives that they're fucking juggling. All these plots that they got. I can't hold on to it. It's too big.
Yeah. Yeah. It's too much movie. And the crazy thing is, the runtime of that movie is under 2 hours long. So like... Yes. It's was crazy. There so much movie that like trying to make it work just made it 3 hours long and you couldn't find like a 2:15? I was very surprised that it's like an hour and 46 minutes or something like that for as much story as they're trying to.
I'm shocked. I just assumed it would have been 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Yeah, no, it wasn't, which was very strange, which is why it actually allowed for me to do a double feature on Friday morning. Steve was going to be my immaculate buddy, but yes, he is out sick. So I will just quickly weigh in on Michael Moen's new one that Neon is putting out. This was a movie that I guess Sydney Sweeney agreed to ages ago, and now, you know, she's Sydney Sweeney, so they actually got to make it. Premiered at South By. You know, I got to say, I was a jerk on Letterboxd and said, you know, more like immaculate. It's like Rosemary's Nunnery. You know what I mean? Like, it's a story you feel you've seen before. Like, if you're watching it and you feel like you've seen it before, it's kind of because you have. There's not a ton of new ground here. And as far as like the religious horror angle, like that, I mean, for me, right, and in my fellow Catholic bud Steve Sadak, like, these are sort of the easier ones to get under our skin, right? Just due to the nature of how we grew up. And this movie, like, it kind of just feels like it's sort of like a Wikipedia kind of level of understanding of Catholicism and rites and things like that. So it sort of felt like, whereas, you know, something like St. Maud or, you know, the King of them All, The Exorcist, right, where like, Catholicism is ingrained in the DNA of those movies. This Catholicism kind of feels like a window dressing.
Right. So it's like a modern trad cath thing. That's like kind of bullshit. Okay.
Yeah.
What's the supernatural element to this? What is scary about this besides nuns who have sticks and beat children?
Yeah. No rulers in this movie. I was waiting for the Blues Brothers to get knocked down a flight of stairs. No, this movie is about, without any spoilers, Sydney Sweeney plays an American from Michigan who moves to Italy to take her vows to become a full-on nun and live there. I mean, it's actually kind of an interesting... I was seeing someone say something about, like, oh, with these horror movies, like, the main character still always has to be an American.
That's right.
What I will say about that, it's kind of interesting because it speaks to, like, the declining number of... like practicing Catholics in this country. And so it's like for this particular character, it kind of makes sense. She is someone who doesn't really have a family. And she moves to Italy to be a part of this convent. And the convent is like sort of like a retirement home for nuns that are kind of on their way out, you know, so she will be helping, you know, older sisters ascend into the
bedpan duty.
Total. I mean, there's a whole, like, this is how you wipe her ass. Like kind of, moment in the movie. You know what I mean?
Oh boy.
And then like, so after she gets there, like spooky stuff starts happening.
Like an evil shit happens. Like they nasty poo she has to clean. Well, yeah, it looks like Muncher.
It's Muncher, dude. That's where Muncher couldn't film Frozen Empire because right. He was busy filming Immaculate.
He was busy ripping off that scene in Dogma.
Oh, right, the shit monster. I mean, and as you can guess by the title and a lot of the marketing, like she is potentially immaculately conceiving a child is what's going on. So that's kind of the movie. And it's 84 minutes, which is cool.
Wow. But
my big problem with it, and again, it's not a movie that I hated at all. I think the last 15 minutes are quite something. But the journey to there, it's fine to have not a lot happen if you have like the atmosphere to back it up. And I don't quite think the movie hits it with the atmosphere. It's quite dull. The score, I did not think worked for it at all. They're trying to do like a riff on a goblin type thing, because there's a little bit of Argento influence kind of thrown in, but like not a ton. So the music really was taking me out of it. And, you know, I'm known to be critical of Sydney Sweeney on this show. I will say the last 15 minutes of this movie, when she's actually allowed to do something, she really fucking opens it up. Pedal to the metal, pretty wild stuff. like sort of like end of Texas Chainsaw kind of levels of intensity. But the movie itself, kind of just a snooze overall. I would say, honestly, like, go see St. Maud instead. See it, or rent it, or whatever. That's that. Now, here we go. You didn't have to go anywhere to see this next movie this weekend. Roadhouse, the Doug Liman remake that just dropped on Amazon last Thursday. Let's get into it here. I think we have some differing opinions, maybe a little bit. Mm-hmm. Hand it off to Eric Siska. You saw this one.
Yes. I you know, I like Jake. I like the location. I kind of like a lot of what's going on here, but the CGI and the action scenes got additional. At first I was like, oh, well, there was that one little, I'm sure it'll pick up. It'll be fine. And then it's like a truck backing up they had to do as CGI. And then Conor McGregor, one of the worst on-screen presences I've ever seen, legitimately shocked me. I thought, well, I don't know his work very much. I know he punches people for a living. I thought he'd at least have some kind of swagger with that, but it was obnoxious to me. But I could see the case for enjoying this movie. I don't really have that big of a problem with Liman. I don't have a problem with Jake. And I thought the Florida location was kind of fun.
No, yeah, I think the Florida is the best part of it. I think it looks great for when you get to see it. I mean, I have to agree with you. Conor McGregor, I feel like he watched like Snatch and Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, and is like, that's the movie. I don't care what the movie actually is. I'm going to be doing what those people were doing. And that's the only way he does it. And he does that terribly, to be clear. But that is definitely the mode he was trying to go for. Like, big smile. Like, you see his ass at least twice in this movie. Mm-hmm. Once in a stinger, which I definitely needed. I want that to be clear. I was very happy to see it again.
I don't understand that stinger, by the way. Can I just say I don't understand that stinger?
Roadhouse 2?
I mean, yes. I mean, like, he might be back for the next one is what they're saying, if we do a next one. Or if you were going to do a DTV-like fucking series with just him, that would make sense coming from this, since clearly they are not going to be revisiting the Roadhouse world after this. Because I doubt Jake Gyllenhaal is going to deal with Amazon ever again after what they did to this.
No.
And to be, I don't like the movie. I think the movie is pretty poor. I think Jake Gyllenhaal and Billy Magnussen are the reasons to see it. And if you really like both of them, I think they both do good work in an otherwise pretty disposable movie. It doesn't feel like Roadhouse. It just feels like they were like, hey, want to make an action movie where you fight a lot? Yeah, let's make an Southpaw 2. Let's make Southpaw 2, but you're down in the Florida Keys instead of in the ring again. That's essentially what we're doing here. And like, if that's your thing, whatever. But like, to me, if you're going to do a movie called Roadhouse, you should try to echo something about like Patrick Swayze's character that is very spiritual and like enlightened. And he has his own code. And they take a lot of time to tell you that he has that code and believes in it. And like, this is just like, well, I'm kind of just a better fighter than everybody, so fuck you. And like, that's essentially the attitude he has, except for like the people who are like being nice to him, like the owner of the bar and the bouncers. He has
the other bouncers. Yeah.
So yeah, I just kind of felt it was just too normal. It just kind of just didn't do anything.
The owner of the bar, of course, Jessica Williams.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Playing Frankie. Daily Show and
Booksmart. Was she in that one?
Probably. She was a teacher in Booksmart. You're right.
Yes, yeah. She's the teacher in Booksmart. She's in Shrinking. So I'll say this. I agree with everything you guys said, both of you guys. I agree with everything you said. And yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to like a movie. It's okay to like a movie. It's a fun enough movie. I understand why you would like it.
Because it's so fucking stupid. Like at every turn, the stupidity, if it was like some sort of community car wash and you were like, 10 more cars and the little thermometer is going to be filled up with red marker all the way. Like the stupidity level with every fight, the red marker is filling in more for the community car wash. And like by the denouement of this motion picture, such as it is, that thing is exploding with red marker out of the top. It's so fucking dumb. It goes around the sun of stupidity back around to me where I'm sitting here like, oh yeah, I can take all this. I know it's all dumb. I know Conor McGregor is fucking terrible. I don't know what that performance is. Some of this digital fight stuff, I don't know what's going on. Why we couldn't back out a truck IRL, I don't understand it. I really don't. Every bad decision from like production wise to like whatever they had to do to handle with the strikes to the decision to not release this in theaters, all of the stupid shit just created this perfect storm for me to kind of have a good time with this movie. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like maybe folks and then if this is the case, you're right to have the response that don't call it this, but like, I feel like the reaction to this movie would naturally be different if it wasn't called Roadhouse, if he was not Dalton, if he was just some other dude. It is impossible to unmarry, these two movies, obviously, unless you stick Roadhouse 2 with Jake Busey right in the middle of it. That can fucking break it for you pretty easily. I would say this movie is actually probably closer to Roadhouse 2 with Jake Busey than it is Roadhouse with Patrick Swayze. Who's the dude in that? Jonathan Scheck, I think, is the guy in Roadhouse 2.
I did not know about Roadhouse 2.
Yes. Oh, dude. Oh, yeah. Jake Busey incredible. In a hot tub with some babes. It's a pretty dumb. It's DTV action movie. I don't know how close it becomes to sequel in name only. I don't know if it's the same town. I don't remember if Dalton is mentioned it all in
swamp. I do remember a swamp being there. So
I'm sort of a swamp.
Yeah. I think the main character is Shane Tanner. And guess what? Will Patton's in this movie as well.
Oh, there's a time there where he was also saying yes to everything for a while.
Oh,
there.
He could maybe be like the Ben Gazzara stand in.
That
makes sense. I did also really like Billy Magnuson in the movie. That dude just knows how to play a fucking creep like nobody's business. And like, you're just waiting for that dude to get his ass kicked the whole time. He plays very punchable characters. I thought that was really great. Him in Game Night's really great.
He's really good. TV work's been great. I'm trying to remember exactly what it was. I'm going to look it up because I do remember that's where I first noticed him. But you should go.
I'll say this, like with the action, when you're not doing computer stuff, I thought some of the fights were pretty decent. I do like, we got things blowing up in this movie much more than in Roadhouse, which was kind of cool. Like I was surprised the ways in which they took it farther than just kind of like a punching and kicking movie. Although there is plenty of punching and kicking to go around. Don't worry about it. But yeah, I don't know. It was like a Thursday afternoon. I popped it on. I watched it all and was delightfully entertained. I will say another character that I thought was pretty decent. BK Cannon is the actress's name playing that bartender. She just sort of, she felt like a legit, like seen it all in the shit kind of bartender character, which I thought was nice. What I don't think worked for me was good old Joaquin de Almeida as the crooked sheriff. Like,
yeah,
no, I just don't know with that guy, because they're sort of hyping it up like that was going to be somebody, you know, and they're also kind of hyping, like, I got confused for a second because they keep hyping up like, oh, Billy Magnuson's dad who's in prison, blah, blah, blah. And I thought like that dude's getting out and it was Joaquin. And then like that sort of shifted and all of a sudden like the dad in prison didn't matter anymore. But I was like, no, that's like, he's the boss. Like that dude should come out and have to like take care of his idiot son.
For it. You're waiting for that. That's what I thought the fucking the bonus scene was going to be. I thought we were going to get Edward Norton at the end of Alita thing where like,
like
here we go. We're going to have a second one, but we're definitely not having a second one to be clear.
Right.
But like that would at least have been something. We talk about this on this month's Once in a Lifetime. Get Eric Roberts in that fucking. Get him right there. And just have him be the guy who you call. That's fine. He has a face for it.
Totally right, dude. I'm going to buy the Roadhouse. Yeah, totally. Oh, someone points out here in the chat, Sean Andrew says Arturo Castro's dumbass, overly friendly henchman was his favorite part of the movie. I think that guy's very fucking funny. And he was pretty funny in this.
I think he's from Broad City. He's one of their friends in Broad City. Yeah, he's funny. Yeah, I like him. Billy Magnuson, by the way, what I remember first seeing him from is... he's got like a small arc in Boardwalk Empire towards the end. I think it's only two or three episodes. I love that show.
He also played Cato Kalin in American Crime Story, apparently. Yes, he did.
He was in a few things. He's in The Good Wife, too. He had an episode or two in The Good Wife as well.
You know what I will say, though? Like, I know it's supposed to be like for a joke or whatever. Jake should have fought Post Malone. Like that shouldn't have been allowed to go down like that. Fucking forfeit at a forfeit at a fight club? I don't think so.
They should fight in real life too.
Oh, please. I mean, anybody wants to punch Post Malone. I'm surprised nobody went out at the Super Bowl and decked him one right at the beginning there. Mm-hmm.
That would have been nice.
Why are we punching people at the Super Bowl? What was he doing there?
He's become more of a, like so many pop artists. He's like gone country kind of. And I'm not sure if this was the game before the Super Bowl or the Super Bowl. It was in that time. He came out. It must have, because he's a huge artist, so I assume it has to be the Super Bowl. He came out and did like a country American the Beautiful rendition.
Oh,
where I'm like, I know him as the stupid idiot white rapper. Like, I know. It's fine. Like, I don't like those songs, but that's who you are. You're stupid and you do this shit. And like, don't do this fucking serious, like, I'm America. Like, get me a guitar out here. Like, come on.
Stay stupid.
Very important. Stay stupid. Very important stuff.
I just find it hard to believe that an underground fight club would allow a forfeit. I don't think that's how that should have worked.
To be clear, he got the purse at least. Like, I mean, that's what happens if you are going to forfeit.
Yeah, but, you know, you should still, even if they don't want to fight anymore, you should beat them to death to get that purse.
I will say, you can make the argument, fine, that Amazon made the right call not releasing this in theaters. But I just know, you know, if I was in a crowd of 20 people at least, you know, like, I don't think the movie would have been better, you know, but the experience would have been fun. Like, watching a dumb as dick movie like this in a big auditorium, you know, and I have to say, I was pretty pissed off to notice, couldn't help but see them plugging Amazon was, the premiere of Roadhouse that they had in a theater on a big screen.
What?
Isn't that fucking interesting? Yeah. Why didn't you just send everyone a screener code and they could watch it on their fucking ass at home? Like you made the rest of us do.
Yeah. I mean, you know,
big screen for thee, not for we, motherfucker. I get it. Okay.
Even though I had problems with the movie, I would have had a better time at a movie theater and I would have definitely gone to see it on the big screen. But hey, here we are.
What are you going to do? But that's it, folks. Three big movies reviewed this week here on Screen Live. Now, of course, we have some reminders and some heads up and some things we don't want you to miss here, such as brand new to our merch store. The new Night Vision, designed by Philippe Sobreau. This is a bit hot off the presses from our Rollerball 2002 episode. Really in love with that Night Vision design. Really in love with that Night Vision bit, I have to say.
Yes, just go to...
pat ourselves on the back a little bit. That's a pretty good bit.
go to whmpodcast.com and click on merch. You'll be directed to our TeePublic store where you can get Night Vision or any other type of shirt like the show graphics. If you follow us on social media, you might know about this. So check it out if you don't, you know?
Yeah.
That's right. And we had a big week, big back-to-back weeks of programming. So just to make sure everyone's caught up to speed as what was going on last week, of course, we had the Gleep Glossary drop, all about Savage Opress,
mm-hmm.
and Darth Maul's loser brother.
And his other brother, yeah. Cerveza Cristal.
Oh, hell yeah.
Dude. I love that.
Stronger brother. The much stronger brother.
Yes, I love that guy.
I still have yet to remember to keep my eyes peeled at the store for Cerveza Cristal in my neighborhood. I know I said I was going to do it on that episode.
Mm-hmm.
I fucking forgot. I was literally at the grocery store this morning. I got to make a note to myself.
Never forget.
That's right. Also, last week, another patron curated episode, Animation Damnation. We were talking about the cartoon Brave Star, which we swore up and down that we'd covered before, and we did not. Nope. So that was a first time for everything. And speaking of first times, might have been your first time last Friday. We dropped the first official episode of Too Old for This Shit this season, where we are recapping the entire first season of X-Men 97. So the first episode dropped last Friday, where we covered the first two episodes of that show. Gotta say, pretty excited for that shit so far.
It's good.
Yeah, playing good real so well. Playing yeah. real well.
Yeah, so far so good. Yeah, get those recaps we'll be doing.
That's right. Yeah. And if you're curious here, that graphic on the lower right-hand side there, that's a graphic that Philippe made with the release schedule. You can find that pinned to our Instagram. We're at WHM Podcast. And also the release dates for all of those episodes are on our website. Go to the Too Old for This Shit page, because it's not weekly, folks. We're doing specific drop dates for these episodes, so you don't want to be confused there. Check that out. Now, this week, the show rolls on. Last week, a listener request month. Got a couple things to crack open. Like, Eric, what are we talking about next? Or tomorrow, literally. Tomorrow on We Hate Movies.
Tomorrow on We Hate Movies. It is Young Einstein.
Oh, my goodness. Look at that.
Look Finally. At this. This is the Yahoo Serious movie that is not so serious.
Eric's favorite movie.
I defend
it. Eric is the defender on this one.
It's a fun... Like Roadhouse, good production value. I like the setting.
Yep. Good animals. Lots of good animals.
Good animals.
Good animals. That's on the free feed, but you can catch that ish ad-free on Patreon tomorrow at the $8 level and up. Also happening on the Patreon, one last listener-requested thing to drop on Thursday, our Star Trek recap show, The Nexus. We're talking about two patron-curated episodes here. We got The Thaw, which is a season two episode of Star Trek Voyager featuring, you got Michael McKean there as a creepy clown. And then Those Old Scientists, a season two episode of Star Trek Strange New Worlds, where Jack Quaid and Tawny Newsome bring their Lower Decks animated characters to life. Very fun episode there. Yes. That drops Thursday, $8 level and up. And now the bummer, of course, we wanted Steve to be here to help usher in the big announcement for what we're doing in April. We got another theme month coming in April.
Oh, I forgot today was the debut of this. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So we had showed y'all last week this covered up graphic here. Of course, this is art also by Philippe. And we're going to announce it now. So this right here, take a look at the April programming. 3, 2, 1.
Oh,
you know what?
Yes, daddy's all month.
Ed Harris is back. Hello, Ed. See you again, Ed.
I got to say, boys, by the way, people, you need to check out the video of these shows on YouTube, because what Andrew just did there was a masterclass.
Hey, you know what? Don't blame me, man. That was the boys in the booth. All right, let's try this again, fellas. All right, try some fucking, an ounce of professionalism here.
All right.
Trying to close out the show. All right, here we go.
Enough fooling around. Okay.
No fucking around now. Here we go. 3, 2, 1, reveal. Oh, yeah. Look at that.
There it is. The dumbest.
Sheenpril.
The dumbest theme month we could think of. Sheenpril. All Charlie Sheen movies. We had mentioned this on the show before, if people wanted us to do all these Charlie Sheen movies, because we haven't done so many of them. So a lot of people said yes. So we're doing it. No apes this year.
No
Sheens instead.
Sheens. We're doing Sheens. Yes. This was really, we had been thinking for a long time, how do we do Men at Work on the program? And rather than just to say, let's do an episode on Men at Work, we're like, no, fuck that. Whole month. Yep. And we're going to deal with a whole bunch of different Charlie Sheen vehicles. Mm-hmm. The monster that he is. But he was a hell of an entertainer, was he not, folks? He
absolutely was. So Chris let one out of the bag, but we'll keep it at that because you will learn every piece of programming for next month if you subscribe to our Patreon and get that Big Daddy Dispatch available at all levels. We'll be telling you every single movie. But we will say, just due to the nature of like what we wanted to do for episodes, like, you know, we're back at the driver's seat here. Some of these are movies that like Charlie Sheen is in, and some of them are Charlie Sheen movies.
Right.
So to varying degrees. So we'll see. But yes, once again, Philippe Sobreau's amazing art. Charlie Sheen dressed as Napoleon riding a tiger, which it just like saying it makes me feel like I just did a fucking line of right. cocaine.
And everyone who you know is not into this idea, don't worry, the Patreon will still have a lot of content non-related to Charlie Sheen, including the return of Once in a Lifetime.
But yeah, you know, it's not a praising Charlie Sheen month. It's just a dumbass thing to talk about some Charlie Sheen movies that we realized like long time coming for a lot of these. So April is going to be pretty ridiculous. We've already started recording stuff for it. It's going to be Bonk Town, guys, and I'm very excited. But that's going to do it for this week's On Screen Live. Again, we hope you have a great week filled with tons of WHMU programming. But until next time, I've been Andrew Jupin.
Eric Siska.
Chris Gabin.
Adios, folks. Bye-bye.